Hey, tennis fans, you are listening to Matchpoint Canada, the official podcast of Tennis Canada. I'm Ben Lewis. Thank you to 10XTO for this special episode. And this week, very happy to welcome on a Davis Cup champion with Canada. He's the 2014 Wimbledon champion in doubles. He's achieved a career high singles ranking of number 25. He's twice represented Canada at the Olympics. And in 2020, he was named the ATP Comeback Player of the Year. Thrilled to have back on the podcast with us this week, Vashik Pospisil. Vashik, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, very happy to have you. I have to ask, like, when you hear kind of the list of accolades and some of those achievements as you get kind of further along into your career, what are your thoughts when you kind of sort of reflect back a little bit?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it quite often the last couple of years. It's probably a bad thing. I'm probably thinking about the next stage of my life slowly but surely. But no, it's incredible. I mean, I just thinking back to growing up from small hockey town Vernon and the dreams that I had in tennis, and I'm very proud of what I've achieved, and obviously still hoping to go for a few more years, but will depend on how my body holds up. I would say that's probably the main hurdle at this time of this stage of my career.
I know we seem to hear a lot from other players. Like, I've heard Stan Wawrinka talk about kind of when he got into his 30s. I feel like appreciating sort of the opportunity to play more and more, and sort of appreciating when you're at those events. Do you feel that now, maybe as you get back and compete, as opposed to maybe when you're kind of in your early 20s and just sort of right in the thick of it?
Yeah, I feel like if I get back to the top 100, and if I'm playing at these bigger events, I feel like I'll really appreciate it. The last couple of years have been a struggle, and I haven't really played at too many of them. So I feel like now, definitely, I think if I'm able to get my ranking back up and be back at the Grand Slams and the main draws and play some of these big events with big crowds, I'll definitely have a different perspective than maybe I did even a couple of years ago, prior to, all these elbow issues that I've been dealing with now. And so I'm just trying to get back there, and it's been more of a struggle, definitely. And, to just try to get healthy. But if I'm able to overcome that, then I think definitely at 33, I'll probably look at experience these events quite differently than in my 20s.
Yeah, just to follow up there, like, where do you feel kind of where you're at right now physically? Because, yeah, as you said, it feels like just the past couple of seasons we've kind of seen you sparingly at events where we see you for a couple weeks, and then maybe you're not able to play sort of consecutively time and time again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, physically I feel good when I'm on the court, and movement wise and cardio, I can't say I've felt a huge decline the past few years there. It's really just been the elbow, which has obviously been quite an issue. I had a significant tear in my UCL ligament 2 years ago, which took me out for probably half of 2022, but then I finished the year pretty strong and then was ready for a good 2023. And then I tore my tendon in my elbow, also quite significant, and tried to play through it after a bit of rest, and in hindsight was a bit of a mistake, and 2023 was basically a complete scratch. So at least fortunately for now, I feel like, when I'm on the court training and not serving, or when I'm feeling a bit better with my elbow, I'm I feel great physically in terms of movement and court coverage. And I feel like it's still good enough where if the elbow, gets better, that I can still play at the high level. And so right now, really just the hurdle is just trying to get that, to see if that elbow can really handle the workload. And hopefully, I mean, it's still some question marks. I'm not sure, how it's going to be, but But that's definitely the biggest concern that I have anyway at the moment, more so than, like I said, the physical decline, which I haven't
Right.
really experienced yet, but I know that's coming too.
Hopefully not too soon. We like I we had the opportunity to obviously see you play in Montreal earlier this year for a Davis Cup qualifier, and I thought you looked good there, helping Canada win a key tie. Obviously, that's an event you seem to pride yourself in getting the opportunity to play. How important was it for you to just make it there in Montreal? And how were you feeling maybe physically then with the elbow?
For some reason I always feel the best physically when it's Davis Cup time. So I was finally getting healthy. I think that was my third week or second week that I would say pain-free, even though I still had some pain and tendonitis. For me, that's basically being pain-free. And then actually had a couple weeks after that where I felt good, and then now I have a small fresh tear in my UCL, so I'm taking a bit of time off now, and then hopefully we'll play an event again in about a month. But Davis Cup is especially as I've kind of reached the last years of my career, that it's definitely probably gone up in importance in my mind. I love playing for Canada, and it's a very special event for me, and it's just something that in some ways has defined a large part of my career too. I mean, I've always feel like I've performed really well at Davis Cup, and now obviously we have the title, and we were world champions and in the end of 2022, so it's very special, and definitely something I'll look back at my career and view as a highlight and great achievement.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. I mean, one takeaway I had from that qualifier that you guys won over Korea was Frank Dantevic in press saying he felt like your team can compete with and beat anybody in the world. And I thought that was significant in the sense that you guys, played a tie without having, say, Denis Shapovalov or Felix Auger-Aliassime. Milos was there and didn't take the court, and still we saw, some depth in the roster with Diallo and Gallarneau. Do you feel that too? Is that like sort of a, feeling of this energy from the group that no matter who is there, you guys are always going to have that opportunity?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, we have depth in this country now in tennis, which is great. I mean, obviously, having Dennis or Felix on the team does change the I wouldn't say the dynamic. I mean, we all get along really well, and the team chemistry is always great. But Dennis and Felix are obviously incredible talents, and they're at the top of the sport, and so having them on the team, I think, we're a force to be reckoned with, and very dangerous team. And obviously, if one of them has an injury or a niggle, there's guys that can play the role and come in and play singles match and play competitive with anybody in the world. But obviously, in terms of being a dangerous team and going for the title and winning Davis Cup, or having a deep run, the chances are exponentially higher, I would say, if they're both on the team.
Yeah, no doubt. You mentioned maybe wanting to play competition again in a month, and feeling those opportunities to get back in big draws again. Maybe it's a nice time to miss the clay season. Do you think you can get back on grass? And if you're sort of carving out a schedule to look ahead for 2024, are there any events in particular you'd really like to get the opportunity to play?
Yeah, not as much. I wouldn't say that I'm focused on any particular events. I'm more so just focused on my health and my body, because I know I can play, even today, a really high level when I'm healthy. So I think, and also my rankings dropped a lot because I would say, I basically missed most of the year, and I made a little bit of a mistake in hindsight, where I wasn't able to get my protected ranking. I came back after 5 months only to get re-injured, and obviously at the time I thought, okay, it's not worth waiting another month to get a protected ranking. I'll just come back and play. I was still ranked relatively high that I could get into to the big events, and then obviously was not expecting to re-injure the elbow, and then I just sporadically tried to play some events, still having issues, and took 2 weeks off, played another event, had an issue again, had an injection. I had actually 9 injections
Wow.
in a few months, which is never a good thing, just trying to get healthy and trying to push the limit a bit. So I, you still make mistakes even at 33. and I feel like that may have been a bit of a mistake. I should have probably just stayed off tour a little bit longer and come back 100% healthy. And so for me, I really just need to build my ranking back, and unfortunately that means I have to play some smaller events. But again, if I'm healthy, then I know I'll perform well at those and build the ranking. And then ultimately the goal is to, I would say at this point, realistically, it's to build my ranking enough at the second half of this year to play the big events, 2025, and then just see how it goes from there.
You not that he's a new coach really, because you guys have been working for I think about a year and a half now, but Malik Jainzuri joining your team, I think front end of 2023. How did that coaching partnership maybe initially come about, and what has he really brought to your team in terms of insights and experience, because he had obviously a long strong career as well on the ATP circuit?
So actually we just recently parted ways.
Okay.
So that's news. Obviously there didn't make any announcements on that or anything, but we were together for I guess a year and a half, and just an amazing guy. Honestly, just big heart, had a great experience. He got up to top 50, I believe, as well. So he brought a lot to the table, and but it was a really tough period. I mean, it was just constant injuries, and at one point we just kind of mutually sat down and said, hey, listen, it just the timing wasn't right, and there's so many question marks even to this day for me. And so I just felt like, even out of respect and love and respect to him, I just kind of there was just felt like it'd be better for him to pursue other opportunities. And we're still very, very close to this, to this day, obviously. And if I get to a point where I feel like I'm ready to really give it 100% again, then maybe you can revisit that. But at least temporarily, we have parted ways. But great guy, great coach, just wasn't timing wasn't right.
For you turned pro in 2007, and you look at it, you ultimately played your entire career through the big three or big four era, we should say. And it's interesting now, obviously Roger is retired. We have Rafa and Andy Murray both, I think, planning to say goodbye by the end of the season. Novak Djokovic still going strong. Is it maybe a bit, even if you haven't played as much the past couple of years, is it a bit surreal maybe for you to see kind of the end of an era ultimately approaching?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially like you said, I mean, I played my whole career with those three, the big three at the top of the game, and it is surreal. I mean, I think even when Roger left, it was a little bit of a wake up call for everyone. Like, okay, everyone was ready for that era to end, and that was a bit of a definitely a blow to the sport. But obviously he played for a very long time, had it was pretty incredible that he was able to play at such a high level for so long, which we're seeing now from Novak as well, which is he's superhuman, obviously. And but yeah, it'll be an interesting shift. I think now with Sinner and Alcaraz, they'll definitely be kind of holding the torch, and I think tennis is in a really great spot. And but we'll the big three will definitely be missed, and it'll be interesting to see if we ever have players like that again that are will be as dominant as they've been.
Yeah, that led into my next question, actually. In terms of this current generation, Alcaraz, Sinner, Holger Rune, some others, what maybe stands out today in terms of their tennis and what they're able to do on the court?
Yeah, I mean, just obviously incredible talents, right? And now that the big three are kind of leaving shortly, you know, someone's going to have to win these Grand Slams. And I think, you know, both Alcaraz, Sinner especially, I feel like they'll have, you know, and this isn't news to anybody. They've obviously already you know, started winning a lot of the big events. And I feel like they'll probably have a very strong rivalry and will probably win the majority of the Grand Slams at this moment. That's how it looks. Obviously, there's young guys that are coming up, you know, many of which are we probably don't even know their names yet. Some are already there. There's, you know, one player that I just saw play recently, Fonseca, that a 17-year-old that seems like he has everything to be part of that conversation very, very soon. But obviously the sport's evolving constantly, right? I mean, the competition is you know, getting stronger and you know, Sinner and Alcaraz really, when you look at their games, it's very hard to find a weakness, right? So yeah, it'll be pretty interesting to follow their careers.
That was really good analysis, and it had me thinking of you know, watching you do a little bit of commentary, I believe for Sportsnet, or TSN, was it, on the tennis side of things. And we're seeing other players. I mean, Chris Eubanks is you know, acting, he's going through his career, and at the same time provides commentary for Tennis Channel Live. Have you ever considered, you know, delving into further commentary? Was that something you might consider post-career or coaching? Or do you want to stay pretty involved in the sport, do you imagine, when you do retire?
I would, yeah, definitely the commentating side would be interesting, you know, to do the big events, not necessarily a full-time thing, but yeah, I would enjoy that, I think for sure. And I mean, tennis will always be part of my life. There's no question about it. I mean, it's, you know, from the age of five, it's basically all I've been doing. And, you know, other than obviously the last 4 years, I've got involved in other projects. And, you know, in terms of being a coach or you know, too closely involved with the sport, I there's is there's just so many things I want to do in my life that don't involve tennis that I you know, will most likely not be coaching. I mean, I don't want to say for sure, we never know for sure, but it's quite unlikely. But at the same time, I would definitely want to help. You know, if I see a young struggling player that has potential that I, you know, would relate to, because obviously I didn't have much infrastructure when I was, you know, growing up and trying to make it on tour. So I feel like I'll always have a soft spot for trying to help, particularly, you know, juniors that don't necessarily have access to experienced coaches or knowledge. And so I definitely, you know, always, you know, want to pa pass down some of my experience. But in terms of, you know, being full time in tennis or a full time coach, at this moment, I can't see that being, you know, it's definitely not likely, extremely unlikely.
I mean, you mentioned other ventures maybe the past few years. I think one of the biggest ones, and this is obviously inside tennis, is being a co-founder of the Professional Tennis Players Association, or the PTPA. Are you guys still quite heavily involved as an association? And maybe if you are, if there is any particular work you're kind of on top of right now this season, what might that be?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, we've made so much progress the last, especially the last 12 months, which is great because my workload has gone down tremendously. I mean, it was such a grind in the first 3, 4 years. I can't even tell you how much effort and energy and, you know, that went into kind of getting it to the stage that it's at now, where, like I said, I mean, now at this point, it's more, you know, overseeing things, being on the player board, obviously still being, you know, heavily involved with the CEO and with the team. But it's really gotten to a stage that at this point where, you know, even if I were to leave today, it wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be a great thing, because I would say still arguably I'm you know, the most involved from the player side, but we do have a really incredible, you know, player board. And if I were to leave, you know, today, it would still be a success. And I think it's already a success. And you know, we're you know, our the relationships that we've developed now with the Grand Slams and some of the major players in the sport, it's just strengthening day by day, and we have a lot of credibility now, and which wasn't the case, you know, 12 months ago. We really had to work hard to get to the stage that we're at now, and we're already bringing value to players and affecting a lot of positive change, definitely even indirectly, where, you know, just by our sheer, you know, existence alone, I feel like the ATP and the governing bodies of the sport have you know, tried to bring value to the players almost in a way to show that they don't need the player association. But at this point, I feel like it's quite obvious that we're here to stay, and that you know, player association in the sport of tennis is extremely important for now and for the future.
Yeah, no, that's well said. I mentioned off the top 10XTO, actually our sponsor for the episode. I know that's a club you regularly use. Why is it like the go-to one for you when you do pass through Toronto?
I mean, whenever I'm in Toronto, I'm training there. Shout out to Eddie. And just, yeah, it's an amazing facility. I gotta tell you, like, for me, there's really no place like it, in Toronto. They have everything. The courts are amazing. There's an incredible gym. Obviously, the people are really, really, really cool, and they've treated me very well. I mean, every time I'm in town, they just accommodate me to the max, and it's a cool spot. So I gotta give them a shout out and thank them for really, like I said, accommodating me when I'm in town. So I definitely can't see myself changing locations and training locations in Toronto anytime soon. That's the go-to. I always try to stay as close as I can to Hotel X, so I can train at 10X with the guys there. And definitely recommend anyone listening to this, if you haven't stopped by, to take a look, and you'll be really impressed with the facilities.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing club. I know you haven't played as much doubles the past few years of your career, but I did want to ask you quickly. There are some trial changes right now on the ATP side, and actually being trialed in Madrid. I don't know if you heard about these changes, but more singles and doubles action. The idea was reserving 16 slots in the doubles draw to enter via your singles ranking. A reduced shot clock was one of the initiatives. Time between points reduced to 15 seconds on shorter rallies, quicker changeovers, and then free fan movement in the stadium during play. Just wanted to get your thoughts. Did you see these changes when they came through? And do you think that's a pro or con to our sport for doubles?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make a strong opinion on this, because the data will really reveal if it's a good decision or not, right? I think, you know, I understand that they're trying to innovate on the double side and make it maybe more compelling for fans, and so I you know, I support the idea of trying to look for ways to make doubles more interesting for fans and draw more viewers in. Whether I think these changes are the right ones, again, I mean, I'll keep that opinion to myself, because maybe, 'cause we'll see what the data shows, right? If it's, so it's pros and cons, right? I mean, just like anything, if you're trying to innovate or make changes, whether it's in singles, doubles, schedule, whatever, it doesn't matter. There's always going to be, negatives and positives that, you know, like I said, time will tell. So I don't want to make I don't want to take a strong position on that again, because, you know, you never really quite know until you try it.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
We'll finish up some fun rapid fire questions before I let you go. First one, morning or night person?
Oof. Can I be both? I just like
Yeah.
being awake.
That's
I like
good.
being awake. I don't like sleeping through stuff. I guess if I had to I'm a pretty good morning person.
Okay.
Considering I like to stay up late, so like that's my initial knee jerk would say would be to say I'm a night person. But
Yeah.
I do enjoy my mornings too. Just waking up and having a coffee. That's probably my favorite part of the day is the quiet, the first 45 minutes of the morning.
Okay, we're pretty similar then. Morning or night match?
Night match.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The more crowd, I just the energy, right? I love playing in front of people and bigger crowds, and that generally seems to be more so evening matches. You get a lot of people coming out and cheering and getting involved and engaged.
Did you ever get one of those US Open night sessions?
I played Rafa on center court. It was the second round, I think, in 2017, and I believe it was definitely a later match. I don't recall if it was a night match, but it was if not a night match, I think it was
Like early evening kind of thing.
yeah, exactly, yeah,
Yeah.
and that was cool. Yeah, that's very very cool, very unique.
Your favorite shot to hit on the tennis court?
Favorite shot to hit on the tennis court would be the forehand. Forehand. I mean, before I would have said forehand serve, kind of 50-50, but I haven't really been able to serve for 2 years, so now it's the
Okay. If
forehand.
you could borrow a shot of anybody's on the tour, whose would it be and why?
I would say, well, Isner's retired. I would have said his serve. I would say the serve is the most important shot in the game, so I would say maybe Kyrgios's serve, and if not his serve, then Novak's backhand.
Okay. Favorite city to visit?
Rome. Yeah, very cliche. Very, that's like everyone's answer, but yeah, I love Rome. Rome is so is just it's I love Italy in general. Which yeah, that's the one, that's the answer.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs for sure.
Okay.
Dogs for sure. Yeah, I got scratched by a cat when I was young, and I'm a dog. I'm a dog person in general, but I've a hard time trusting cats and their motives.
Yeah, that's fair. Your best friend on the tour.
My best friend on the tour, I would say Christian Harrison. Christian Harrison, yeah, amazing guy. Had really tough time with injuries, throughout his whole career. So unfortunately hasn't been able, in my opinion, to reach his potential because of, all the health issues he had. But just an amazing guy all around, and obviously, was close with Novak over the years with the PTPA as well. But Christian would be my close friend.
Best memory at a Grand Slam.
Winning Wimbledon, yeah, the finals against the Bryan brothers, winning in the fifth set. That's got to be the one. I mean, obviously, quarterfinals of singles as well. Great, amazing memory and accomplishment, but the doubles finals the is takes the cake.
What's your go-to meal post-match?
Go-to meal post match is probably s just salmon with vegetables, or a good steak.
Okay. All right, this is
Protein
a
heavy.
yeah, this is a good one. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a driver are you?
A 10 out of 10.
Oh yeah,
Oh
really?
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm confident there. I'm confident
Okay.
there.
All right. I wasn't
I think I'm a
expecting that
great
answer.
driver.
Yeah.
I think
Okay.
I'm a great driver. Yes, I do.
Is this a self-review or have other people made remarks before?
This is a self-review, but I've heard that I'm a great driver.
Nice. Okay. I love it. Okay.
I've heard that more times than he said. No one's ever said I'm not a good driver. At least maybe they're thinking it, but I've never heard that before.
Okay, last one. One person living or dead you would love to have dinner with.
I would love to have dinner with Elon Musk, living and dead, probably John Lennon. He
Okay.
was I was a huge Beatles fan when I was young. Still am, obviously, but from the age of 11 to 15, I was only listening to the Beatles, and to this day can know all the lyrics to every Beatles song ever written, even
Wow.
the so John Lennon just would be, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Vashik, it's always a pleasure catching up. We hope we get to see you back on the courts soon, and obviously, we'll see you later this year. I'm sure representing Canada at Davis Cup as well. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Thanks for having me.